You're listening to Ask a Black Doctor, Friday Facts About COVID-19 featuring Dr. Bukasi Dubé. Join us every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. for a half an hour as we discuss issues surrounding the current pandemic, vaccines and distribution, dispel myths, provide facts, and address concerns. We'll also be providing updates about COVID-19 vaccines and discuss how we can build a better culture around Black health. Episodes will be available wherever you listen to podcasts, so head on over to thenumbers.fm for the link to the show. Now let's jump into it. I want to thank you all for joining us for another episode of Ask a Black Doctor. My name is DJ Ambush with my host, Dr. Bukasi Dubé. We are in episode 3 of our mini-series, Sexual and Reproductive Health. These episodes have been absolutely amazing. If this is the first one that you've heard, go back and listen to the first two, and there are many, many more on the way to come. So let's go around. Let's go around the room, introduce ourselves. Who do we have on the call today?
My name is Dr. Roberta Hunt. It's she, her pronouns, and it's really lovely to be here.
Hi, my name is Shirley Paul, and I am a registered nurse from Multnomah County Health Department and currently a student for my nurse practitioner license, and she, her pronouns, and I'm excited to be here today.
Hi, everyone. I'm excited to be here in shared space. My name is Mariana Carey Smith. My pronouns are she, her, and queen, and I am a sexologist and a sexuality educator.
It's good to see everybody. Man, I'm so pleased to be in this space. Honored to be here because we have guests that have a lot of knowledge and wisdom to share with us. Thank you for joining us, and DJ Ambush, it's good to see you as always,
yes,
my man.
Yes, yes. Very, very good to see you all. Very excited about this this session and this whole series that we're doing right now. It's been absolutely amazing. But let's jump into it. So just recently, we're at the end of August. On the 25th, Idaho's trigger ban went into effect, which bans abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. Doctors who facilitate an abortion after that time could face between 2 to 5 years in prison if convicted. The exceptions to ban rape, incest, or medical emergencies. Can I get a little bit of feedback on that from our guests? I know we did talk about seeing some of these things coming down the pike and how many states have trigger bans that were just waiting for the decision.
What stands out to me, and this may have been mentioned in the previous episodes, which is important, but I think it bears repeating, is that for most pregnant people, 6 weeks, most folks don't know that they're pregnant within that time frame. So I think that's a problem, number one, because it's coming from a perspective of many of the folks. I'm going to make an assumption. I'm not going to label all of these people. I don't know them, but I'm going to make a grand assumption that most of these people aren't folks who can become pregnant. So the perspective that's being offered around when a pregnancy can be determined or detected is very problematic for me. And so I think it just, it creates an opportunity for all other kinds of things that are harmful and detrimental to folks who are seeking care. It brings those into context. And to criminalize healthcare professionals who are supporting folks seeking care is also highly problematic.
Yeah, and to me, the way Dr. Hunt was talking about, it leads to delay in care service being provided. It can lead to death, sepsis, especially in the case of ectopic pregnancy. And the fact that they count any, what we call for chamber movement as heartbeat. And I'm a science person, and it is not a heartbeat this early. And also for the fact that many of early pregnancy symptoms mirror the same symptoms that you have when you're PMSing. And so you can be PMSing and have nausea, vomiting, loss of appetite or increase in appetite, bloating, literally you show the same litany of list of symptoms you get when you're pregnant. And I know people are saying like, well, get in tune with your body. Well, if it was that easy, I don't think we'd need doctors now, would we? The body doesn't have like a blueprint that it follows. People experience things differently. And to be honest, I just don't think people should be spending that much time in other people's body. It's not your body. To me, that's really what it boils down to. It's not your body. You don't get to tell us what to do with ours. And finally, I think I'm going to sound salty and mean. People are like, well, if God didn't want you to be pregnant, you wouldn't be pregnant. Well, why are you guys taking Viagra? If God doesn't want you to have an erection, why are you taking something for erections? And it shows you the double standard, why it boils down to misogyny and people really wanting to be able to tell you what to do with your body and put you in your place. So it's funny to me because a lot of it is like based on Christianity in a country where we're supposed to have freedom of religion. And it's always like what's good for me, the interpretation of my religious text doesn't apply to me the way I want it to apply to you when it comes to women. So that's another thing for me, because I don't think we can have this conversation without talking about the religious rock that they're standing on to make this decision in a country where we're supposed to be a secular country.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's really important to pay attention to the contradictions that are being lobbed at people as rationale for banning abortion. I think about the teenager who I think out of Florida was told that they needed to keep their pregnancy because they weren't old enough to make that choice about abortion or not. But what we're saying is that they are old enough to parent another person. And for some, maybe, but for a lot, especially if they are like, no, I'm not going to do this, that's setting up both that young person and that baby for a whole lot of hurt that could be avoided, should be avoided. I really learned about my ovulation cycle when I was trying to get pregnant. For a lot of folks who may be pregnant, they're not trying. So they're not paying attention in the same way. And if they have any kind of dysregulation in their cycle, why would they be paying attention in the same way? You know, I think the real implications of this are so vast, both in terms of how ludicrous it is and the ways that it really puts people, it puts responsibility on people that is not fair.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that case. And yeah, the contradiction was very apparent, and it was striking and just really so surprising. Like, okay, this child is telling you that they're not ready. You're saying, yes, they are. In any other situation, where would we trust a child to be responsible for another person's life? Like, I'm pretty sure in that same state, would this child be allowed to stay home by themselves? And here you are, you're forcing this child to be a parent. And, at some point, it's all about, you know, freedom of will and free speech, and we should be able to do anything we want. This is the land of the free, all of that. And then the exact same sentence. The very next sentence, it's, well, you need to do what you're told in this particular situation. We know what, the state knows what's best. There was a word mentioned earlier, sepsis. I don't want to assume the listeners are as wise as I am and know what these terms are every time you guys use them. As a matter of fact, I'll take this opportunity to reveal myself. I had no idea what that term meant until maybe an episode before this. And I'm going to consistently play the novice in the room. Could someone please explain what that term means? Sepsis. What exactly is sepsis?
So sepsis is, it's usually used, so it's a medical term just meaning an overwhelming infection in the body, right? It's usually a constellation of symptoms, and hence it's called, often referred to as sepsis syndrome. And it's when at that point, the body needs extra support essentially to stay alive. There's vascular collapse, the heart rate increases significantly to try and keep up with the vascular collapse. And vascular collapse just means that you can't maintain your blood pressure. It drops so low that you die. And there's not enough blood flowing to the vital organs. And so, and this often leads to multi-organ failure as a result. So it's an overwhelming infection, either by a virus or a fungus or a bacteria, some organism that's foreign to the body. And that's what usually causes the sepsis.
And how does that work in relation to pregnancy specifically?
So we used to see this, and we're still seeing this now, right? When people were having backyard abortions, they would retain something that was supposed to come out during the abortion. And as a result, that can seed bacteria into the body and cause sepsis. And that's something that's been talked about over and over again, that, hey, when folks are having these, when folks are in places where they can't get legal abortions, like what we just heard about, the Idaho law, we will see more things like that, more adverse reactions happening. I was heartened to see yesterday when the UN came out and admonished the US Supreme Court and admonished lawmakers in saying that, hey, this should be a fundamental right. By doing away with Roe v. Wade, you are infringing on women's rights to choose. So we are, as a country, especially the states that are not following this, are in violation of human rights, essentially. And that's very, very, that's very sad. And as was pointed out earlier, that most of the people who are making these decisions, let's just say they shouldn't be making the decisions because they haven't informed themselves well enough. And two, they have organs that don't permit them to get pregnant. And so they shouldn't be having as an outsized opinion as they're currently afforded.
Absolutely. I think we all can agree on that.
And if I can kind of add to Dr. Bukosi's thing about sepsis, one of the things I love about being a nurse is trying to figure out a way to explain things to people in the lay terms so they can understand. Like, for example, if you have an infection, most infection are kind of like localized, right? So let's say you have an infection in your finger or you have a sinus infection, and that infection is not about to take you down in a minute, right? But then when you get an infection that becomes systemic, which means like it gets to the point where it gets to your blood and it gets everywhere, then just like Dr. Bukosi was saying, like your body just can't handle it, right? So you start getting things like organ failure, then your kidneys aren't gonna work and all the other parts of your body that needs to help keep you alive aren't gonna work. So basically it becomes a systemic collapse of your body. Like if anybody remember basic science, they always talk about homeostasis, right? The body needs to be in a state where everything works right. So you have to have the right kind of temperature for your body. You have to have the right kind of hydration, enough water. You have to have the right kind of nutrients, and your cells and every organ has to be working properly. Once you get sepsis, everything goes out of whack. And basically people in the healthcare system are just trying to get these things back to what they used to be. And this is what happened a lot of time when women, sometime you get a illegal abortion and some of the placenta stays inside, or do you not expel all of the tissues? This is not right. What makes one person's life more weighs more than another person's life? And this is what we're looking at too. And I think the way she was talking about how the laws are contradictory, but I think if we really look at the history of the United States, a lot of the laws are contradictory. For example, you could join the army at 17 years old, but you can't drink or smoke, but you can go die in war. There's a lot of things we do, it doesn't make sense. And if you really look at the end of the day, everything really boils down to capitalism and white supremacy in the end. That's really what it's all about. Now that we have this ruling, if you look at it, if you go search into the news, you found out there was a lot of hoopla about how the United States is having a decrease in how many children are being born. And so on and so forth. And well, who's gonna work? If you look at the way the response to this pandemic, it wasn't about saving people's life. It's how we're gonna keep the economy going. I think we even had one politician who flat out said he'd let his grandma die for the economy. Like, oof. Your nana, sir, your nana, oof. That lady who gave you the candies, like for the economy. And so it's really, when you look at American culture itself, it's really entrenched in capitalism, racism, and individualism. It's always about me. And now there's a lot of worries about the workforce. Are we going to have enough people for the workforce? And that's one of the things that they're talking about all the time. And if you're looking at the way it's going, they've been telling us for years, for people of my generation, or even people before that, you're talking about Gen X and older millennials like myself, they kept telling us, if you can't afford a baby, don't have a baby. And we're like, okay, sir, we heard you. We can't afford them bloody babies, so we're not going to have them. But now they realize, oh, shoot, they took us seriously. Who's going to work those minimum wage jobs? And that's what it boils down to. And then you have the racism part. statistics showed us by 2030, America is going to be a majority minority country. And that gives you a fear of not enough white women are having babies. And I think really, when you live in a country that is so entrenched in white supremacy, I think the biggest fear is not really equity, is that they're afraid that one day we might decide we want revenge. And if you have numbers, that makes it even more accessible. And I think there's, so it's not just one thing, it's a compilation of ideals and religion and racism and capitalism that brought us to this point that we are right now with those kind of laws being passed in several states.
I think another thing that is quite, you know, disturbing about this whole thing is this abortion ban. It makes people afraid to talk to their doctors. And what we know in terms of Black maternal health is that we need to have good relationships with our doctors, with the medical people who we are engaging with. And anything that gets in the way of that endangers our lives. And so if someone is, let's say, having a miscarriage, well, within this whole hysteria, in some places, someone having a miscarriage could have legal implications for them. So why would they want to go to the doctor? Why would they want to go to the hospital if going to the hospital could mean that you get incarcerated? But the reality is that if you don't get the medical attention that you need when you are having pregnancy complications, you or the fetus you are carrying will die. And, you know, I think what we often miss is that the mother or the person carrying the fetus are inextricably linked. So what happens to one is happening to the other. It also is bringing up this issue around the failure of the US social safety net, that if what we're saying is that we want people, if they become pregnant, that they're going to carry these children, are we going to pay for these children, right? Families who have children under the age of 5 have the greatest chance of falling into poverty that can take them decades to get out of, right? So, you know, there are major class implications, economic implications related to this. And what we also know is that societies that have more supports around pregnancy, around families, are healthier. People live longer. They have fewer complications. What are you thinking, Ms. Marietta?
Oh, thank you, Sister Dr. Professor. So what you're talking about, like what I'm hearing, is you're describing what the tenets of reproductive justice are, right? In terms of what we are supposed to have. Like, I'm trying to find a different word for it, but supposed to means that we are entitled to these things, right? As we live in our full humanity and in our personhood, right? So that it's to understand that reproductive justice, you know, quickly, it's about access and not choice, right? So reproductive justice is grounded in the place that we all have the opportunity to determine our personal bodily autonomy, if we want to be pregnant, if we want to not be pregnant, if we want to parent, if we want to not parent, and to be able to do and make these decisions in safe and sustainable communities, right? And the history of our community is that we haven't been in safe or sustainable places, right? That the way we were brought here, our ancestors were brought here, was through violence and removal and erasure, right? So it's like, so the context of how folks were brought to the Americas deeply influences what is understood as our rights as people. And so it's just really, you know, listening to this conversation, it's like there's a, just understanding the hardships that many folks, pregnant people, are facing when they are seeking access to care, in particular abortion care, right? Being able to pay for an abortion and the care that comes afterwards, right? Because it's important to understand the process itself is one thing, the procedure itself is one thing, then there is aftercare that is necessary for folks who are seeking abortions, right? And so understanding what's happening in the context of folks who may have other children and who are seeking abortion care, folks who have to take off work and they necessarily can't afford it. If we're talking about folks coming from Idaho, traveling hundreds of miles, understanding that the clinics that they might be looking for, say in Eastern Oregon, are not there, right? Or that they have to travel even further. to come to the western side of our state to receive access to care. Having money for food and lodging, because it's not a quick trip. This isn't a short experience that they're going to have. So it's like just being mindful when electeds are making up these laws, that there's a lot of context and nuance that is not even considered when you are trying to mandate the behavior of people that you're not even remotely concerned about, because you're not living these lives. None of the folks making these laws are living the lives of the people that are most impacted. And so I think it's just really important to be aware of the ramifications of these kinds of laws and where the tentacles of oppression, you know, continue to move out. And what does it look like? And how can we, as folks who want to support folks who are making this decision, what does it look like for us to be able to stand these folks up in support and solidarity, right? What does it look like for us to be able to support folks who need housing, support folks who need transportation, support folks who need childcare, support folks who need food, right? Support folks who need support because they're not able to work. So it's like, do they have bills that they need to take care of? You know, what is it that we are actually looking to support folks in making these decisions? And so that's kind of where my head went.
I was like, want to piggyback to what both of you said, because when Dr. Roberta was like, safety net, I was like, girl, what safety net are you talking about? Like, I have cousins that live in Paris. I have cousins that live in Canada, and I have friends from high school that live all over the world. And we're a joke out here. I'm gonna be honest. It's a joke and it's embarrassing, really, because as a country, I think America just has the best PR firm of any other countries. Apparently, we're the best, even though really we're the best at just being mediocre. You have a state that cannot even provide you the full amount of formula that your baby needs through WIC. And that you have to be so poor. And we know that the poverty levels that they're giving us are not really poor. What they're asking you to be is basically starving in order for you to qualify for certain things. You have a country that cannot even, once we were having a formula shortage, figure out how to get more formulas to people. You have a country that, if it says it's pro-life, but it's basically letting a whole pandemic just ravage people on a regular basis, having several hundreds of people dying per day. So like, and that brings back to the contradiction. And then when Dr. Hunt was talking about trusting our providers, there's already a history of us not being able to trust our providers. I cannot tell you how many Black women went and talked to their providers and say, you know, I've been feeling a little bit depressed lately, maybe suicidal. Next thing you know, DHS is at your door. Did they refer you to a counselor? Did they say, hey, let's try some antidepressant? No, because the other part about this is that when it comes to Black people, there's already an assumption of us not being able to parent our children. This is one of the reasons why we're the most likely of people to have our children removed from us and have our children being adopted out from us in this society. So you're looking at all these things that are like so broken already in the system. If, let's say, you were saying you were as pro-life as the society is saying we are, shouldn't you fix all this broken system first before bringing a baby into a system where women are going back to work within a week of giving birth because they couldn't afford to stay home, where people can't even afford daycare? So many things in the system is so broken that they can't even honestly say, like, look you straight in the eyes and say that we're pro-life and this is about people's life. And where do you put, how do you balance what life is more important, the person who's already here and the clump of cells that just started? And also, where is my religious freedom as a Jewish woman? I am totally allowed to have abortion for whatever reason I want. I can have an abortion. So now who are you to tell me? And then you're thinking now it's turning a medical place as a place where you don't feel safe, because basically it's like having the Gestapo or the Stasi just basically telling people about it, which is one of the main reasons this law was passed. It was a right to privacy. Like, how do you know I'm pregnant? Who gives you the right to go tell people I'm pregnant? For the same reason, also, people used to be able and call your boss and tell them you're HIV positive, and then you lose your job, you lose your apartment. Where does it end? And this is a slippery slope of the government just being able to be in your business whenever they feel like it and telling you what to do. So now where's that freedom that we're talking about? And so I want people to think about this, because right now I think we are incensed and we are upset about what's happening right now, but it is just a slippery slope of what can happen to other so-called rights that we have in this country. And we all know who gets affected more when these things happen. It's always Black folks, Indigenous women, and other poor women of color that get affected the most. Because as they start criminalizing people, guess who's not gonna have the right money for an attorney, or who's not gonna be able to afford to pay bail? It's gonna be us that's gonna be affected. When you're in a country where if a mom is homeless and cannot afford to have a place for their children, the state will pay $70,000 a year or more per child for somebody else to watch your child, instead of just paying for a place for you to live. So the system it's broken. You shouldn't be forcing people to have children anyways, but definitely not in this system where there's no support whatsoever for parenting, or safe pregnancy, safe birth, safe anything.
Totally agree. I'm totally with you. We need better support. We need a government that works, that responds to the needs of the folks, needs of the people that make up the government, right? It's government for by the people, for the people, and etc. So our representatives need to be more responsive to our needs. Dr. Hunt, I know you had something to say, so I'll step back and allow you to enlighten us.
You know, it really fell out of my head. I think one thought I was having, you know, I meet people that are like, how do we help? How do we help? And in Oregon, I think we really need to think about how do we help? And also, what are some of the barriers to helping? So I'll kind of pass that to our group.
So if I could jump in and say, we need to vote. We need to step up and say, enough is enough. You are not representing our needs. You're not representing what we want, and we just need to elect new members who care more about what we want as a people. Because this affects everybody. It affects whether you're wealthy, whether you're poor, whether you're a person of color, or you're not. It affects everybody, and as has been clearly articulated during this conversation. But I know that there are other ideas on how we can help, how we can support each other. Please indulge us.
Yeah, I mean, for me, voting is good, but like, how do we keep the government accountable? Because this is what's upsetting me about this, right? You're supposed to be a government for the people, by the people. The polls are telling you nobody wants this, but somehow they still get to do it. And that's the part about the American democracy that I'm not quite all right with. Like in Haiti, we're about to riot, okay? Because we done tell you what we want, and you're about to do what you want, and we're gonna say we don't like it. So you're either gonna do what we want, or you gotta go. And that's the thing. I think the American brand of civility, of be nice till they listen to you, is one of the things, the reason why we where we are. That's why I'm a proud Haitian woman. Like, things may not be good back home. And that's why they're probably never going to have a movie about our revolution, because we just got tired of it. And say heads are going to be lopped off because y'all, we done told you we don't want to be slaves, and you continue one of the others. You got to go, dude. So I'm not saying let's lopped off heads, the government listening to this. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying we should be able to keep government accountable. I think another way is to prevent these people from being able to stay in power for so long. I don't know why Supreme Courts are lifetime appointments. People get divorced because the person you married 15 years ago is not the person you are with right now. So what makes a judge what they believe the law is, how they interpret the law, how they view the law, would not change in 15 years. And some of these people have been there for a long time. And how can I expect a 70-year-old to understand what a 40-year-old wants? These people were in power when there were even computers. That makes no sense to me. I think besides voting, there needs to be rule change so these people don't get to stay on here doing what we don't. I think there needs to be a way of kicking people out. That's not a whole impeachment. Like, we need to be able to go to the poll and say, I don't want this
person no more, and they're not listening, and they ran on this platform and they're not providing what they said they were going to do, they got to go. I think that's probably one of the bigger issues besides voting for us, because we've been trying to vote and nobody as Black people know what it's like to have hope in government. I mean, kind of hope that you know going to dash anyways, because they just come to your church, say all these nice things and wear a kente scarf, and then you know they're fooling you and bamboozle you, and you know they ain't going to do nothing. So why shouldn't I be able to take back my vote? I should be able to take back my vote. Like, I feel like the government is a big catfish. We've been catfish for centuries. They keep putting one face out there and we get something else. I think for me, that's one of the ways we can help. Really trying to figure ways to hold the government accountable for the lies and for not giving the people what they actually want.
Yeah.
What about for like today, like mm-hmm. next today? Week, like, yeah. You know, I mean, what about, you know, because this is, I think
volunteer.
What do you got, Miss Marietta?
I love you, Sister Dr. Professor. You know this.
I'm sorry. Thank you. I can't help but like, sorry.
Suzette.
Yes. And Nurse Shirley, I just need to say, you had me. It was the kente scarf for me that took me out. So I want to say that.
I'd be tired.
I want to say that. I love it, though. I love it. I'm here for all of it. And it's all true. In this current moment, I think what needs to happen is that we need to sort of reach back into some ancestral practices of gathering our community around one another, right? So for folks who are seeking care, reproductive health care, and it could be abortion care, it could be post-abortion care, whatever that is, like there are ways that we engage with people. I believe that spirits and ancestors put us in places for particular reasons. We have a purpose. So we have folks who know how to interpret the law, right? Oregon has the most progressive and comprehensive reproductive health law in the country. The West Coast has created I can't remember what it's called, like a West Coast, I'm going to say alignment, because I don't know what the word is, but the three states of the West Coast have committed to making sure and ensuring that abortion care is accessible for its residents. And that includes, I'm not saying that they're the West Coast, but the Western part of the United States, that includes Alaska and Hawaii. Now, Alaska is, you know, I'm not going to talk about Alaska because I've never been there, but I'm just going to say I'm not messing with them. So, when we're talking about the West Coast, like we have people who know how to interpret the law, number one. And so what it means is that for folks who know how to interpret the law, to be able to translate that information to folks who are accessing care and to something that's relatable. So we can figure out where people need to go to get the services. If that means that we need to have a transportation train for folks to get to where they need to be, then we need to come up with ways to do that. If we need, you know, Oregon set aside $15 million specifically in the budget to support reproductive care. This is a fund that is being managed by Seeding Justice, formerly known as McKenzie River Gathering Foundation. They are, they are the fiduciaries in a sense. They are managing that fund, right? So they have funds that are available to support small nonprofit organizations and other CBOs who are providing support. And they are supporting the disbursement of these funds, right? So the state intentionally set aside $15 million, which is, like in my mind, that's a lot of money. And I also recognize for what's coming, right? It may not be, it isn't enough, but that there are opportunities to get engaged from that perspective, right? If you know of, if you have ideas of organizations or CBOs that need that support, you can be a liaison or connection to those between Seeding Justice and those organizations. You can be, you can step in the gap in that way, right? We have Nurse Shirley on here. So we have healthcare professionals. We have Dr. Bukosi on here, right? So we have healthcare professionals who have access to information and understanding how to get you to the places you need to receive care, right? We have Sister Dr. Professor Suzette on here, right? Who is in an academic institution, but who is also grounded in community-based organizations and has a wealth of knowledge of how to be able to engage people in process to be able to get folks access to care. I'm even here as a community-based sexuality educator and sexologist who is in connection with a lot of other people. So I think it's about really utilizing the skills that we have in community to be able to get folks the care that they need, and to also be able to be transparent and say, if you can't do it, but you know somebody who can, or if I can't do it, but I can connect you to somewhere who potentially can, because we also don't want to put people out here because it's not safe, right? It's not safe to have folks out here when you have people who are looking to harm folks behind this, right? And so it's important to really understand what you are able to do, what we're able to do in this moment. And it does include voting, right? It does include voting out people who don't believe or support in the values that we have. It does mean that we need to consider, we need to have term limits, number one, because any Supreme Court justice who's talking about tab as a pop, you got to go, because that's not even around no more. That's gone. Right. We don't need to have that
floppy disk or something.
That's what I'm saying. Right. I'm sorry. We're just not going to do that. You know, we just need that. We need to have an understanding of what the values are that reflect our understanding of our personhood and our safety. And we need to actively engage in that. And so there's a separation. Like, there's the way that the United States functions because it was set up that way. And there's a way that our community functions because this is how we've always functioned. And most of the times these things are separated. But it's important that we have people who can navigate the separation, right? We need people who know how to do the white speak and who can then translate that back to community language so people can get the support that they need. And I just realized I've been rambling, and I see you, Sister Dr. Professor Suzette.
Thank you. You know, I also think that we need to be talking about sex and reproduction, and we need to be talking about contraception, and we need to be talking about this in our community. And it needs to be a normalized conversation. I teach a sexual and reproductive justice class. And in that class, what I notice over and over is that people say, oh, I was never taught about this. I didn't talk about this. And though in Oregon, we have a really awesome mandate to teach comprehensive sexual health education from kindergarten through high school, so age-appropriate sexual health and healthy relationship education, brilliant, but we don't fund it. And we allow anyone to teach it. And the reality is that talking to people in a knowledgeable, informed, and culturally appropriate and sensitive way is not something that anybody can do. It is a skill set, a really important one. So I want more sexual health educators. I want anyone who feels like, gosh, I'm really interested in this, feed that interest and start learning because you're needed. I think that the more that people can learn about this and normalize the conversation, the better off we are. And to also understand this is a Black issue. So tell me, Shirley, what is your take on birth control and how you talk about it with your clients?
So I was saying that birth control is quintessential to the Black community, and we have a birth control issue, not because people don't want to use birth control, but how birth control is presented to the Black community. It's presented as something that's being forced to you, and basically people telling you how many children you could have and how often you can have them. Whereas birth control is a life planning tool, right? So when I talk to my clients, I'm like, girl, what you want to be doing in a year or two? If you want to get a promotion at work, having a baby change that. You want to buy a new car, having a baby change that. You want to go back to school, having baby change that. You want to move to a different state, having baby change that, because it costs money and it also costs time, right? So when I'm talking to my clients about birth control, I'm like, look at it from a selfish point of view. And it's not selfish as long as self-care. All my kids are like 3 to 4 years apart. It's not because I couldn't have them. I want my vagina to forget what happened to her last time. That's one way. Two, I want to be able to make sure that I can kind of afford them. That's another thing. But then I also had other plans. I wanted to go back to school. I wanted to travel. So birth control really allows you, your family unit, whoever you're with, to really plan having a baby around the things that are important in your life. And I think once we start talking about birth control this way in the Black community, I think we're going to have a better chance of more people using birth control, because then they will feel like it's a way to empower yourself, not a way for the state to tell you what to do with your body. So I think that's a very important conversation when it comes to birth control for us.
Right? Like, one of the challenges around maternal health is that we don't talk enough about what people need to have healthy pregnancies should they decide to have them, and what they need in postpartum care. And this used to be a collective effort, but the more that we've been divided and pushed into our homes with this model of the nuclear family, the more vulnerable we have become.
Amen, sister. Amen.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say amen to that. I think we're at the top of the hour, and
Oh my goodness.
We should be wrapping it up. There's something that we need to talk about at the next time we meet, as how this decision striking down Roe v. Wade has an impact on medical education. You're going to have a generation of doctors who are not comfortable, who haven't been taught how to perform safe medical procedures like abortions to do it. And in states where it's outlawed completely, they're not going to be getting this training. So it's going to affect, it has huge ramifications. And so I think at some point we need to discuss that. I'll turn it off to DJ Ambush and let us, for him to close us out.
You drop that bomb and then you turn it over to me to close it out. Fabulous. I thought we were a team. I'm not sure how this is working out right now.
Figure it out.
Thank you all so much for joining us for this episode. This is incredibly informative, and yeah, I am looking forward to the next discussion. I didn't even think about that factor right there, Dr. Dubay. Thank you for mentioning it. I love that we spent some time talking about what we can do as citizens and how we can assist each other as we're dealing with, you know, people in other states that do need to be able to come here and be able to have the regular care that they should be able to receive in their own states. Thank you all again. Thank you all so much. And we will catch you on the next installment.
All right. Thank you, guys. Right.
Thank you. I love the passion.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to Ask a Black Doctor, airing every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. right here on The Numbers. If you missed it, you can find the link to the full episodes on our website at thenumbers.fm. You can also subscribe to the podcast on all streaming platforms. Be sure to rate and leave a comment. If you have questions you'd like answered on future episodes, you can submit them through our website or the link in our bio on Instagram and Twitter.